through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Now, we told you guys, rather reminded you guys, of that one time that Michael Brockers basically said that the Rams upgraded after trading away Jared Goff and then, oops, got traded to the Lions to reunite with Goff. Well, there's a part two of that story. We'll get to that at 1:15. Before we do any of that, though, we've been doing our free agent profiles. We looked at potentially departing Seahawks. We looked at potentially incoming Seahawks, basically free agents from other teams. Now, as we exit the first week of the first phase of free agency and we're looking at who's still on the board, Jake has his free agent wish list.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Free agent profile.
Jake, got a couple guys on here. There is one in particular I cannot wait for you to get to.
Really?
I think you already know who it is.
One above the rest?
Well, it's the one you got listed first.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now,
you don't have to go in order, but I can't wait.
Now, to me, at this point, you have the guys that you were targeting, guys that you wish that they would go after. And now, as you've seen the market play itself out, I think now you kind of develop a little bit of a wish list here. If you're wishing for the Seahawks to address certain positions that they have not done yet, what is it going to be, and who are the players that you're heavily looking at? Now, I think when you look at the Seattle Seahawks and what would be the obvious move is to bring back Carlos Dunlap. Now, the reason why that's such an obvious move is because you know exactly what he brings to the table and how big of an impact he can have on your roster. The moment he arrived, this defensive line got better. And it wasn't just him, it was everybody around him got better. And that's the part that you love the most. You love the fact that when Carlos Dunlap arrived, Jaron Reed started playing better. LJ Collier started playing better, right? You started to see Benson Mayoa play better. Everybody around them became better. And the other part of it, too, is that Jamal Adams, you didn't need to blitz him as much or try to bring as much manufactured pressure to try and make up for the lack of pressure you're getting on the quarterback, the lack of sacks that you were able to generate and eliminate the amount of times you are leaving your defense exposed. And you're stepping into the realm of a style of defense that Pete Carroll has just simply never played. He's never been a high-pressure-oriented team. And it showed because the defense hadn't practiced it a whole lot, right? They practiced it in spurts, and I think it was used. They wanted to use it as an element of surprise and a way to throw in wrinkles here and there in a given game. But not have to do it close to 50% of the snaps on defense. And that's where they were at one point in time. Now you're able to use Jamal Adams as a safety in the area that he is designed to be in. You still send him in pressure, but you can be more effective, more selective in that style of pressure. And so to me, number one on my free agent wish list right now, it is the pass rush, and particularly it's Carlos Dunlap, Stacy. That one to me is hands down no brainer, and especially the price point that he is currently at, unless he is sitting there. The one thing that you have to wonder about, would Carlos Dunlap accept an offer from the Seahawks right now after seeing all the free agency go by him? Would he accept the deal? Or would he play the Jadeveon Clowney card, Stacy, and say, I'm going to wait around and see if I can find something better?
You know what? It's fair for him to wait around, especially since the Seahawks decided, and I'm not faulting them for this at all. It's probably a tough decision that I would have agreed with if I were GM. Decided, hey, we're sorry. We've decided we're not going to pay you $14 million or the $14 million cap hit that he had. He would be, I think, the best available pass rusher because you've seen how great he can be and you see how he was a catalyst along with a healthy Jamal Adams for turning your defensive line around. But Jake, can we get to the next name? Because this is the chaos that I want in free agency. Speaking of the pass rush,
okay,
let's get to the name we've all been waiting to hear about linked to Seattle because we haven't talked about this player enough.
Because the part of this is this, it's the combination of your pass rush. What is it going to look like? I don't want to go into the year going, all right, Carlos Dunlap and Daryl Taylor, someone we've never seen before. And he's going to basically play his rookie year this year.
Yes.
Right? Carlos Dunlap and LJ Collier. Carlos Dunlap and Rasheem Green. It's just not an effective combination, right? So now you get to who is the other player that you can bring in, knowing that the market is very, very frigid
who
right now.
Who is it, Jake?
Jadeveon Clowney.
Let's go!
Would be the next name, not necessarily in order, but would be the next name I would bring to the table. Jadeveon Clowney, as a number one pass rusher, not good. You saw that in Seattle in 2019. You saw that with Tennessee in 2020. He is not a number one elite pass rusher, but he is an elite game wrecker. And if you had Carlos Dunlap and Jadeveon Clowney on opposite ends of each other, that would be a whole lot of fun to watch. Like, it really would be. And Clowney is an elite run defender. He's not an elite sack getter, but he's a guy that can generate pressure. And if you have someone on the opposite side, like Carlos Dunlap, I think it makes Jadeveon Clowney's production better. And you're not putting as much pressure and relying on him as much, Stacey, to be 100% healthy, which is something that he struggled with.
Well, and you're also not paying him. Remember the number we were throwing out this summer, last summer, was something like, okay, is it $15 million? Is it $14 million? Is it $17 million? This wouldn't be anywhere near that. So all of a sudden, you're suddenly more comfortable with, like, well, maybe he isn't going to be the best edge rusher you've ever had. Suddenly, being able to take a chance and roll the dice on him potentially meeting the ceiling is a lot more palatable because of the number. You've also got Benson Mayowa, and you got a couple other names on here that are interesting.
Yeah, Benson Mayowa, to me, is a very underrated guy here.
More sacks than Jadeveon Clowney last
year. More sacks than Jadeveon Clowney. He had six sacks.
Six more sacks than Jadeveon Clowney.
He improved as an overall player in the second half of the season, in my opinion. Look, he got quarterback hits. He got tackles for loss. He became a better run defender in the second half of the season. But I still view Benson Mayowa as a rotational pass rusher, not necessarily the game breaker, the game wrecker, right? Good complementary player that if they brought back Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayowa, and you had Daryl Taylor, I'd feel pretty happy with that. I'd feel confident in it. However, opportunities to potentially upgrade maybe, right? And so now that if you get to one of those candidates, how about Carlos Dunlap and Aldon Smith? Dallas Cowboys, 5 sacks last year, 48 total tackles, 14 quarterback hits. He had 5 tackles for loss, but Stacey, it was just him. He was out on an island all on his own. First year coming back after missing 4 seasons in the NFL.
That makes him more intriguing because
he was the only guy they had that actually brought legitimate production.
Which means he got some double teams, which means he faced a bit more pushback than would have some of the guys that were on Seattle's D-line and had Carlos Dunlap there and had Jaron Reed there.
And that's exactly why Aldon Smith would be extremely intriguing. And guess what? Not only were the Seahawks interested in Carlos Dunlap. Yeah, you forgot that part. You blew it.
I'm sorry.
But they were also interested in Aldon Smith. That's who they were also targeting in the trade deadline period last year. And they weren't able to get a deal done. So maybe you're able to bring in Aldon Smith and Carlos Dunlap on deals that are very, very easy and very reasonable for you to bring in. And you elevate your pass rush overall. Now, the only issue with this is, Stacey, is that you're bringing in two guys that are 32, going to be 33, and Aldon Smith is 31, going to be 32. So you have two aging players on the edge, but two very productive players that you would have, and both active players.
Now you got three final names here for today's profiles.
Three final names that I'll throw at you as well, because I think they're worth mentioning. Melvin Ingram is a complete wild card. At his best, he's one of the league's most dynamic edge rushers. And he suffered a pretty serious injury this last year with the Chargers. Very much limited his production. He was not the same Melvin Ingram that you know of throughout the majority of his career. So you're going to get him at a relatively easier price point, but high risk, high reward type of signing. Justin Houston is another player that I think would be highly intriguing. However, I do think that he might be a candidate to get a higher deal than maybe even Carlos Dunlap just given the fact that he's been so dang productive and consistently productive. He had 11 sacks his first year with Indianapolis 2 seasons ago, and this last season he had 8 sacks. So overall, his production as an overall player dipped pretty frequently. He turned into more of a rotational player this last season, Stacey, but overall, Justin Houston is a guy that I think you could get and count on pretty consistent play as much as you can from Carlos Dunlap. Consistently in their career have been 9 to 8 sack guy sacks in a given year, and I think that Justin Houston would be a pretty cool one. So the last one that I'll throw at you, this is the ultimate wild card. This would be like DJ Reed type of wild card. This would be Olivier Vernon.
Okay.
Now, the name everybody knows and recognizes. He had 9 sacks this last year. He had 11 tackles for loss. He's an incredible player.
Yeah.
Problem was, is he tore his Achilles at the end of the season.
Ooh, I don't even know if he's going to play this year, though.
So he might not, but you could sign him to a very relatively small deal and hope that he can play for you in the second half of the season. Okay. If you could get Olivier Vernon back 100%, healthy, ready to go at the end of the year, much like DJ Reed. People didn't think DJ Reed was going to be able to play this year, and you got a major, major steal for that player. And Olivier Vernon could potentially be a steal along those lines. So although it might be a move that would be, you would have to require a lot of patience, that would be an intriguing move to potentially make because he's been extremely productive and a very, very good football player. But to me, my ideal combination would probably be...
I was just about to ask.
Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayoa, or Carlos Dunlap and Alden Smith.
Okay.
Those ones to me would be an ideal combination that I see as not just fantasy land, but extremely realistic. Extremely realistic. So Alden Smith and Carlos Dunlap, I do think is a realistic potential opportunity for the Seahawks, the way that the market currently holds.
All right, that is Jake's free agent wish list. He says, looking at pass rushers, he wants a combo of Carlos Dunlap and either Jadeveon Clowney, Benson Mayoa, Alden Smith, Melvin Ingram, Justin Houston, or Olivier Vernon. And your preference is either Clowney or Smith, maybe Mayoa, but just a couple options there if you missed any of it. That kicks off hour three of the show. Jake's free agent profiles. This one, the free agent wish list, guys available for the pass rush that are still out there. Curtis, are you keeping an eye on the Zags just in case anything wild happens?
Yeah, they're up pretty comfortably on
Oklahoma
right
now.
Okay.
Then in that case, we will go ahead and jump into NFL headlines. Former Falcons safety Keanu Neal is with a new team. He'll be debuting with the Dallas Cowboys, but it's not going to be at safety. No. It's going to be at weak side linebacker. So he agreed to a 1-year, $5 million deal with the Cowboys. So this isn't a long-term thing. This is just kind of a chance to kind of get a second wind with a new team. This is interesting. I remember when this was first linked, and it was he will play either will for the Cowboys or, and then there was another team that was on the list too. And we sent it to each other, the three of us, to be like, wait, what? I mean, it's not the weirdest transition for a strong safety to be looking potentially at an outside or like off-ball linebacker, but it's still interesting to be several years into your career switching to that position.
It is, but Keanu Neal, I think if there was a comp out there, Jamal Adams could be that player, right? Not an exact comp, but you talk about body type. Cam Chancellor, it was a player that essentially was a linebacker as well, so... Keanu Neal, this reminds me of, remember Deion Buchanan out there? He used to play for the Cardinals, and coming from WSU, he was a player that kind of made this transition as this hybrid undersized linebacker who could run sideline to sideline and be very, very successful early on in his career. So I think this is a nice move for Keanu Neal to potentially find some new life in his career in the market. And I'm going to be curious to see how this plays out just simply because when we talk about the Cowboys, it's not like they're hurting in linebacker play. They've got Jalen Smith. They've got the kid that they drafted from Boise State. So where exactly is he going to fit in this rotation? That will be extremely intriguing to me, but a very good player that if they could find a way to get him on the field, I think that this could be a very underrated signing for the Dallas Cowboys.
Things slowly getting back to normal in the world of sports. We're going to be seeing a select number of fans at T-Mobile Park. We've also got a fun contest coming up for you guys. I think we're all kind of expecting that at least some portion of fans could be allowed when football resumes in the fall. But now you're going to have the NFL draft also entering the ring, getting back to a semblance of normalcy. The 2021 NFL draft in Cleveland will allow a select number of fans. So it's not going to be full capacity, but unlike last season, you will once again have fans during the NFL draft, which means we can get back to the way it should be, which is Commissioner Roger Goodell being booed by real people.
That is what we're here for, right? That is what we watch.
That's
the draft
how to get
for.
Things right in the world.
Gotcha.
It just doesn't feel like the draft if he's not being booed.
Well, it was weird seeing him as time went on through the draft.
I kind of liked Robot Raj.
He got more and more comfortable, right? He was just kicking back.
It made me like him more that he was doing outfit changes.
Yeah. He originally was in a suit, and by the end of it, by like the seventh round, he was in a
sweater vest. Yeah. Pretty soon, I was waiting for him to have like a cat on his knee, chilling back, like, hello, fellow football fans.
Yes.
We are all having fun. Robot Raj.
Now, the spot that they're going to, right, have they announced where this is going to be?
Cleveland.
So Cleveland, of all places, that's where they're going to go. So they went from promising Vegas last year to Cleveland.
I don't see the problem.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah,
I've always said Cleveland is the Vegas of the Midwest.
I've said that many times. I call it Believeland.
I guess I just never have been.
Yeah,
around
you've been missing
that.
Curtis when he's said
it
that
all the time.
Says it
Trent,
like every
listen
day.
Some days,
yeah.
Jake.
Wow. Jeez.
Sorry,
okay.
I just must be a really terrible friend, but that sounds like it's going to be a thriller. But you know what? The people of Cleveland, I'm sure, will go all out for
the
this.
The people of Cleveland will never forget that you said that. And you, much like our enemy of the show is Troy Aikman, the enemy of Cleveland is now going to be Jake Heaps. Just know what you did.
All right.
Know what you did.
I do.
Before I continue on to our next story, which is the one I was teasing about Michael Brockers and Jared Goff, I'm getting a lot of questions on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line saying, did I miss Curtis in the Capri Sun Challenge? Guys, look. I'm not proud of this, but I dropped the ball. I did not bring in the Capri Suns today.
Yeah, we're without juice today.
I know. We'll be doing it tomorrow. Let's do it tomorrow to wrap up the show. Final segment.
All right, let's do
we'll
it.
We'll have Curtis. He's been practicing. Jake and Brooke have been trying different methods to get
We've just been thinking of different techniques.
Different techniques to kind of cut down on some time. And so they will pit their heads together. They'll try once again to make sure Curtis can break the world record, the Guinness World Record. It's probably not going to happen, Curtis, but best of luck to you. So we'll do that to close out the show tomorrow. You have over 24 hours to prep, Curtis.
Let's go.
And this time we're going to get Pacific Cooler, which is even better than Fruit Punch flavor. So you're
going to... Going down smooth.
Exactly. You're going to be even more incentivized. Okay. Next story here, when I was talking about. So Michael Brockers and Jared Goff. Now, they're not like enemies by any means. They were teammates with the Rams. When Goff was traded to Detroit and Matthew Stafford landed with the Rams, Michael Brockers did an interview with, I think Good Morning Football or Around the NFL or something like that. And he basically said, I'm summarizing, that getting Stafford there elevated the Rams. And
in his words, he said level up.
Leveled up. And the problem is that he was then traded to Detroit and he has to have that awkward moment where, and I use this analogy, where you send a text that's meant for the side conversation to the group thread and then you have to be like, oh, sorry. So he did make up with Jared Goff, though. That is the follow-up to this story. So this is from The Athletic's Chris Burke. Michael Brockers said... earlier today, I just wanted to come to him as a man and let him know I have so much respect for him. That wasn't any shot against him. I was just trying to pump up the Rams fan base. And then Jared Goff said, Michael Brockers, is one of my good friends and good teammates, and I get it. He apologized very quickly. I love Brock. Sometimes it happens, but that guy is my guy. No ill will. We're all good.
Well, I'm glad they were able to figure it out, but I love Brockers trying to say, like, hey,
I said
the other player was better than you, and that we were going to be a better team without you, but
it was
not a shot at you whatsoever.
Look, did I say he could throw the ball farther and harder and make us win more? Yeah, but did I say he was a better friend? No. And I will always cherish that about you, Jared. Like, that would have been my move.
Yeah, and Jared probably was like, yeah, cool. All right, cool.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, yeah. I got it.
The Eagles are meeting with Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco looking for a new home. He had been rumored to the 49ers, so there's still a chance he lands in the NFC
Joe
West.
Flacco.
Though he's also has a chance to land in the NFC East now, talking with Philadelphia. I don't know. Would he be there to back up Jalen Hurts? I'm assuming Jalen Hurts
is
the guy.
No, he would
so
be there to back up Jalen
Hurts.
And it would be a total scheme fit, right? Like when Jalen Hurts goes down, Joe Flacco would come in and he'd totally be able to replicate the same type of play, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Totally.
Look, Joe Flacco's a classic example of a lot of these quarterbacks that are continuing to get life in the NFL that, you know, at some point probably going to be good for teams to recognize that they're way over the hill and that Joe Flacco's ability to mentor these younger kids might be a little overstated.
Now, there were a couple Rams free agents, Rams and 49ers free agents, that Jake in particular, you had your eye on as potential fits for Seattle, and you said, oh, I'd love to see these guys here, especially with former Rams coach Shane Waldron here, who was the pass game coordinator. Maybe there's a chance that he brings some of his guys. They did bring Gerald Everett, so that is one connection.
Yes.
Josh Reynolds, though, not going to happen. That wide receiver has gone on to sign with the Tennessee Titans. The Titans, though, have lost a ton of people, so, you know, you got to let Tennessee win some.
No, you don't.
Okay.
You don't need to let them win any.
I don't know.
Now,
I just think you could let them win some.
This one was a bummer to me because I look at Josh Reynolds, and is he the guy that I think would make the team, you know, a Super Bowl contender? Like, he would be the piece that would take them over the top? No. But would he be an incredible value signing? Yes. I think he would bring, he could have brought really good contributions to the team and had been a reliable receiver three for the offense. And making that smooth transition from for the Seahawks in terms of having how many players are learning a new system, Josh Reynolds and Gerald Everett would be guys that, you know, could teach guys, could help guys understand the system a little bit quicker. And so bringing that to the table with free agents is such a huge win. When you can make it a seamless transition in terms of your scheme fit. So, bummer to lose out on the opportunity to bring in Josh Reynolds, and we'll see what they end up doing. I'm becoming more and more convinced that, look, there's a couple guys out there that I would be intrigued by, and we'll go through that tomorrow in terms of our wish list, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Seahawks dip their toe in the draft to address the receiver position.
Now we're going to switch to some Mariners talk. Bringing on Mariners insider Shannon Dreher in 1 second. Before we do that, I'm just going to drop this one last story in here for 10 seconds. We talked about Isaiah Wilson, who was the offensive tackle, who was drafted by the Titans in the first round in 2020. They traded him to the Dolphins, essentially swapped seventh rounders because he was such a bust for them. There were behavioral problems, etc. Well, now the Dolphins have waived him. So he is currently without a team, a 2020 first round pick, currently without a team after being traded to another team. Tom Pelissero lists among the reasons that led to the Dolphins waiving Wilson. He was hours late for his physical. He was late for his onboarding process and didn't show up for voluntary workouts, which he had committed to on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah. It's a bummer, you know, for this young man. The reality is that there's something going on bigger than football, and whatever that is, I hope he can figure it out. It's really sad to see somebody that has a promising career or a promising talent not be able to fulfill it. And so I hope whatever's going on in Isaiah Wilson's life that is leading him to make some of these poor decisions, that he can get him figured out and that he can get back on track, because there's a team out there that would be willing to give him a chance if he could do that.
All right, let's head to Peoria. Mariners insider Shannon Dreher joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Here's the 1-2 from Paxton. Swing and a miss. A helpless cut at a ball in the dirt, picked up by Murphy. Fires it to first in time. The eighth strikeout for James Paxton. He has retired 8 in a row, and he looks just fine dealing here in the desert.
Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it's Mariners insider Shannon Dreher. Shannon, it was a great outing from Paxton. We've been waiting to see him all spring training. Finally, we did. What were your early takeaways?
Well, I've been seeing him all spring training.
That's true.
I don't think anybody believed us.
we did it.
He's on the backfield. the throwing sim game.
Shannon, it's like Stacy's conspiracy theory that the Woodland Park Zoo, they say they have a tiger, but
that's
she's never
is.
Seen it.
I needed to see it to believe it.
Well, I guess it's better to not be seeing tigers when you should than to be seeing tigers when you shouldn't.
That's very, very true, Shannon. Now, it was great to see James Paxton out there, and, you know, we as fans could watch it, as media members watch it, but you got to see him up close and personally and have been able to watch him this entire time and really understand the plan for James Paxton. What has been that plan for him, and how positive was it for him to have the outing that he did?
Well, the plan was to have a normal spring training, and that didn't happen because of work visa issues. And, you know, all that they could do at that point was have him throw sim games on backfield. So what we were actually seeing at the time was very much what we would have seen on the big fields, except he was not throwing to other teams. And we saw him go through a normal progression that you would see with any pitcher. He seemed, you know, very familiar. I've watched him for years in spring training, and his first couple of outings, it was a matter of, you know, getting his pitches, kind of locking in with everything, feeling comfortable with everything. And kind of what jumped out at me was you weren't seeing the big velocity, but you didn't normally see that from him in spring training. I've seen him enough to know that he's the guy that kind of when the adrenaline kicks in, that's when you start to see that. And that was probably the best thing to see last night. He was sitting around 95, hit 97 on the radar gun, and honestly, I didn't expect to see that until you got him into a big stadium. So I think that was a huge positive. I think the fact that he came in, and it was a little bit rocky for the first couple of batters, mm-hmm. but after that, he looked like any other pitch. Actually, he looked better than the rest of the rotation. Seems like everybody's had a little bit of a stumble in the last outing or so, which is normal in spring training, but to see him come in and not have the benefit of those games and look like you would expect him to look at this point, I think was very good. And I love what I saw from the reactions of teammates. If you're on Twitter, you saw Justice Sheffield, Marco Gonzalez, Justin Dunn, all reacting to the performance that he had. And they weren't able to see that. It was an away game. And so, you know, they didn't travel for that. So a lot of fun to see it all come together for him and see him be a part of that rotation.
You're listening to Mariners Insider Shannon Dreyer on Jake and Stacey right now. Shannon, when Jared Kelnick was injured, I thought maybe that would make Jerry DePoto's decision for him, at least make it a little bit easier. But he was back out there, had a great day. How's he looking, and where is he in his recovery?
Well, I think he's fully recovered, and I think one of Jared Kelnick, as only Jared Kelnick can do, in his last test before he was put into a game, he was hitting in a sim game on field two in Arizona, and Scott Service wasn't there for the whole thing, but towards the end, he kind of wandered over and took a look at it, and Kelnick was in the box for his last at bat, and Service told him, okay, whatever happens on this next pitch, it's your last one. I want to see you run to second. And so Kelnick did, it looked like he kind of popped one through the left side of the field. All of a sudden just takes off, bursts out full speed out of the box, makes a beautiful turn around first base, goes to second, and slides into second, which I don't think is what anybody, they didn't need him testing it that much, but that's what he was going to do. He was going to show he was completely healthy, popped up, called himself safe, and ready to go for games. So I don't think the leg is an issue right now for him.
Of course, that's how he would do it. Shannon, one of the things that really caught my eye in the conversations has been the idea that Mitch Haniger could potentially be your leadoff batter. Is that a real conversation that is coming up on opening day, or is that just something that it could be a rotational thing that you could see Mitch Haniger every now and then be your leadoff batter?
No, I think he is your leadoff batter, and I think that's a function of having a better lineup than you have had in the last year. And I think if you look at that 1-4, it's going to be a tough lineup for opposing starters to go against. And you're going to have Haniger, you're going to have Ty France, who up until yesterday was leading all of spring training in average in OPS. He's second now. Mm-hmm. And Kyle Seager and Kyle Lewis will be in that mix as well. And, you know, J.P. Crawford took over that spot last year because Haniger obviously was out. He's got the nice on-base numbers, but he doesn't make contact as much, and he doesn't have the power potential that Mitch Haniger has. So I think that you will see Haniger at the top, and I think that's kind of what you're seeing more and more in baseball. It's no longer just the guy who can get on base and who's speedy. It's you realize that the guy at the top of the order has one more at bat usually than everybody else. And other than the first inning and leading off the game, he could have runners on. And so it's nice to have that opportunity to drive those runs in. So I think right now they are able to put Mitch up in that top spot and utilize him fully, whereas in years past you might have needed him hitting three, you might have needed him hitting four sometimes. Now you feel a little bit better about what you have got, and you've seen Mitch Haniger in the leadoff spot. He played about 70 games there a couple of years ago, and he did well. He hit around 280 with it and did show a little bit of the power potential and good on base. So I think this is good news for the Mariners that you are able to put him up in that top spot.
You mentioned him in your answer, but I want to just take 1 minute, our last minute with you here talking about Ty France. You mentioned this in your Mariners notes on 710sports.com. Baseball America came out with a list of the 25 spring training standouts. Mitch Haniger was in there, and then you said, I'm not sure how Ty France did not make that list. And you mentioned that. You said he's second among qualified hitters in average and OPS. Now, I go back and forth, Shannon, as I'm sure many fans do, between feeling like, okay, well, it's spring training, calm down, none of this is legit, all numbers are going to be kind of overinflated, and then thinking like, what if he is a legitimate like hitter and power hitter for this lineup? Where are you standing on him right now, and how excited should fans be? I mean, can they start to be kind of excited about what he can bring?
I think so. And you know, spring training stats obviously mean nothing. They don't really count in the large scheme of things, but you will often look around who else is up at the top, and the names you would expect would be at the top for the most part. That doesn't mean that another name can't kind of sneak in after a strong spring, but not only is he up there with the numbers, but he's up there with a lot of at-bats. So those are qualified at-bats, but he's kind of near the top of that list because they are wanting him to you know, really kind of lock in with the hitting, because this guy's going to be your DH for the most part heading into next year. But what has been so fun to watch in him, and I joke about it on Twitter all the time, but I call him Ty. He can really hit France, because anytime you talk to anybody about him, he can really hit, follows his name.
It's like best shape of his life.
You know, just, yeah, that's
he can really
exactly
hit.
But he can really hit. He can really hit. You know, he even got it out there in French once, which is kind of fun. You know, you look, he's got a very mature approach. He knows who he is. It's a remarkable story. He's a 34th round pick. I mean, mm-hmm. We probably won't see that again, because there probably won't be 34 rounds in the draft going forward. So that's, you know, incredible. Of course, came up under Tony Gwynn at SDSU, and, you know, there's a little bit of that in him. But he is a guy, you know, that hit .399 in half a season at AAA just a couple of years ago, had 2 years at AA. And when you talk about the young players needing that development, he kind of found himself in that second year at AA, and that's where the power came from. Got a little bit of a different swing. He's not part of that launch angle revolution and trying to hit everything out of the ballpark, but if he stays true to the ball and if he stays with his approach, he hits the ball hard, and there's a decent chance that it will go out from time to time. So I haven't seen him overwhelmed by anything, and we remember he's got actually some substantial major league experience at this point. So I think everybody feels pretty good. Everybody around the Mariners feels pretty good about what he can do with the bat. So you hope that, you know, when the switch gets flipped and all of these count, we see very similar things in the regular season.
She is Mariners insider Shannon Dreher. You can read her work at 710sports.com. Shannon, everyone always loves it when you join us. listener favorite constantly. Tell us that you can join us next week to help us get listeners ready and primed up for opening day.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about this next week.
Fantastic.
It's so fun. I mean, people are getting there. It feels like baseball is really around the corner. Normal baseball, full season baseball.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're following along, some fun things going on with this Mariners team and some interesting decisions that are coming up.
Absolutely.
All right, we can't wait to preview a few of those. Thanks so much, Shannon.
Thanks, Shannon.
All right, guys.
See ya. All right. What I need to know is coming up next. It's how we close out the show every single day. You already know how it works. I'm going to remind you, send any and all questions you have in to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. Text your questions to 710-710. What I need to know coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's what I need to know, and it's how we end every single show. You send any question you want into the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line 710-710 from the 206. Wait, really? Any question? Okay. Hot dogs or corn dogs?
Hot dogs.
No, I know.
Easy. More versatility.
I said hot dogs too, but initially I said corn dogs because I wasn't thinking straight.
No, you really were not.
I know. It was an emotional decision.
Would you eat a corn dog?
Yeah. Yes. Well, yes, would I eat
but
a corn dog?
If I had the option, hot dog all day, every day.
I know.
Like,
you can put anything on a hot dog. Corn dog, you're dunking it in either ketchup or mustard.
Well, and the thing with the corn dog is the dog inside is never grilled or crispy. It's always like it's boiled, basically.
Yeah, it's, and it's also hit and miss, like to the quality of the dog that's inside it.
Very true, very true.
Oof.
Don't like that.
Hot dog every time.
Someone wanted to know, Jake, this is specifically for you from the 253. What I need to know. Jake, is there really a benefit to wearing a fanny pack? We're going to Disneyland next week, and I need to know if I should get one. LOL.
This is no laughing matter.
Oh, sorry.
So I'm sorry if you feel embarrassed asking the question, but I'm just going to tell you this is a very serious decision that you're
Got it.
Having here.
Got
and
it.
The answer is 100% yes.
Okay.
You need a utility tactical bag. Okay.
What are the basics of the tactical utility bag?
Well,
what do you need in it?
Okay, so obviously you can put your phone, hand sanitizer, a sunscreen, your tickets, anything else that you need that's really small. And the best part about it is while everybody else is having to go over to those, lockers to be able to put their phones and their wallets in that they make you do, if you cover up your fanny pack pretty well, then you could just walk right through the line. You could skip everybody that's having to stop and go make that. So it's 100% worth it, and you will thank me for making that purchase.
Okay.
Try and get a cool one. Don't get a lame one. Go and get a cool one.
Don't get a lame fanny pack. Got
yeah.
it. Okay.
There's some cool ones now.
Cool.
I'm telling you.
What I need to
They're
know
the coolest.
From the 425, I'm only reading this so I can say me. Which of you on the show could hold your breath the longest? It is me, and it's not close.
I don't know about that.
You might have an urge to talk at some point.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Wow, Curtis coming down with the hammer.
My last boss at my last job was like, I'll give you $100 if you don't talk for the whole day.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you earn it?
No.
Oh, wow. $100 and you couldn't do
no,
it?
No, but I do think I could hold my breath the longest. We used to have to do these drills in swim where the entire swim team has to... You have to be underwater from one length of the pool to the other, and you have to go like 20 times or 15 times. And you can get to 14, and if anyone comes up for air, you all have to start it over again.
Oh. How long was this pool?
Like an
25 meters.
Pool?
No.
So half of an Olympic-sized pool?
Yeah, but that's regular for races, 25 meters. So you go 25 meters one way, all underwater, 25. Well, not all under. The point is you can't come up for air. So you would be sprinting.
Okay, but the key is that used to. That's what you used to
do. Oh, I think
do.
I could still, I think I could do this still.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, you know what? We can just do a competition. How about that? Huh?
Someone's saying you should call it your UTAC belt. Utility tactical. Tactical
UTAC
utility.
Belt?
Your UTAC.
Okay.
Yeah,
UTAC.
I think we're overcomplicating
UTAC.
This.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, let's just call it what it is, a fanny pack, But... If you want to make it sound cooler, then you could call it a utility tactical.
I think you should. Someone, by the way, has not forgiven you yet, or has not forgotten. Certainly,
why
you for on Friday in our What I Need to Know segment, you said that it doesn't matter to you which way you put the toilet paper roll
because
on the thing.
It does.
It absolutely does.
And here's the thing that I realized, and Brooke pointed this out to me because she said the same exact thing, which is why we are soulmates and meant to be together forever. Is when you have kids, that whole thing legitimately goes out the window. Case in point, I went home and Brooke showed me, hey, you want to know why it doesn't matter? Go look into the bathroom. I look in the bathroom and our toilet roll was completely just a giant mess. Because
from kids pulling on it?
From our kids just pulling on it. And then they try to put it back together and it's just one giant mess.
Yeah, you can never roll back a toilet paper
roll. No, it's never the same.
It's like putting toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah,
it's never the same.
Trust me. So, Curtis, you and Brenna right now might care about the way that the toilet paper is rolled. Well, you can kiss that goodbye.
Fine,
in about
I'll be the
a
last civilized
two.
Person okay? on this show. Putting
you
toilet
won't
paper
even
on
know the
right
difference.
Way.
You won't even care. It'll be just like, I don't know. I just grab it.
From the 206, I think it went away. What I need to know, sparkling water or still water?
I think you're a monster if you say sparkling water.
Obviously, yeah,
sparkling it is
water.
Still
it's
water.
Obviously, sparkling water. Sparkling water is significantly better
why?
Than still water because
it's
sparkling,
it?
Because it's fun and exciting.
No, it's elitist.
Yeah.
It's well,
well, I don't like
well,
the common people water. I have to get sparkling water.
Sparkling water is not elitist. It is.
You have to pay for it literally everywhere. Still water is free. It is still free regardless of where you're at. Sparkling water, you gotta whip out your wallet if you want to pay for that.
Well,
there is not sparkling water fountains, are there?
There should be.
There are in like Clyde Hill or whatever it is over there.
How about this
Bellevue.
One? Y'all, from the 425, in NFL headlines, I was telling the story about Isaiah Wilson, who was a 2020 first-round pick by the Titans, traded to the Dolphins, then released. Someone said, hey, what about the Hawks taking Isaiah Wilson?
No. Sorry. Not interested.
All right.
Until he can prove that, like, hey, I've got my life together and I got this figured out and I want to get back into it, like, it's not worth it because clearly someone else tried to do that early on in his career after a year and he still hasn't gotten to that point. He's not taking this seriously. So until he realizes that, there's zero reason to have a desire to try and bring him in.
Someone said, Jake, come on, man. My 8-year-old knows toilet paper goes over the top.
Okay, well,
I'm just saying,
your
you have a very contrarian opinion with toilet paper.
My son is 4. My other one is 1.
He'll learn.
They don't understand this, nor do I really care, because guess what? If it goes under,
Jake,
you can still just grab it
such
and
a bad
rip
take.
Away. It's not a bad take. It's very practical.
It works so much
the
harder.
The fact that people are actually stressed out about this opinion blows my
mind.
There are bigger problems
out
there,
people. I
need to
walk away.
A lot bigger problems.
That'll do it for Jake and I today and possibly forever. Certainly for today. We'll be back tomorrow.
Curtis,
don't forget we got the Capri Sun Challenge.
Oh, that's right.
I got you. All right. He's Jake Heaps. Curtis Rogers. I'm Stacey Ross. Do not go anywhere. Wyman and Bob is next on 710 ESPN Seattle.